This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this Stockbox interview. On Stockbox today, we're joined by the CEO of Power Metal Resources, and that is, of course, Paul Johnson. So, hello, Paul.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Paul. And how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Looking out the blue sky, it's a bit nippy outside, but at least it's not raining.
Yes, it's always nice when it's not raining. It's quite a nice weather here as well, so time to maybe get out for a little walk if possible. But I know we've got a lot to talk about this morning with Power. Always very busy with you, so I'll be surprised if you can find time for that walk. But could you provide, first of all, a strategic overview of what you've done in the first 2 years of the current business model?
You know, it is actually just coming up to 2 years next month. We started out back in February 2019. I had to think for a second then. And we refinanced and restructured what was then African Battery Metals, a company with three exploration projects in West and Central Africa. Our first job was to look at those projects and to see exactly what value we could extract. Ivory Coast was a very substantial amounts of money required to go into it to make it work. So we didn't really focus there too much. Cameroon was a very large scale project, but in very difficult operating environment with, in terms of access and doing cost effective work. But we did a work program in 2019 and got some results out. We were very fortunate with the DRC because we identified pretty quickly a 6.8 kilometer copper anomaly, which has now turned into a 6.8 kilometer long copper cobalt anomaly that we're doing work on right now. So we then knew we had to bolt on more projects, which we did with major district scale nickel sulfide PGM projects at Hennete in Tanzania in conjunction with Katoro Gold, and with the Molopo Farms Complex project in Botswana with Kalahari Key. So we started the process of building our company in 2019 as well. Since then, we've added more, and now we have quite an attractive North American precious metals business with projects now, including the announcement yesterday in Arizona with the Alamo Gold Project, in British Columbia, Canada, with the Silver Peak high-grade former working silver mine project, and with, as announced yesterday, in Ontario, with the projects that we've taken on board very recently. In addition to that, we bolted on last year the Australian Gold Joint Venture, where we have the 49.9% interest with our partners Red Rock Resources in a major land application footprint in Victoria. On top of that, we've taken on the joint venture with Kavango Resources in Botswana. Mm-hmm. Which is Ditao Rare Earths and the Kalahari Copper Belt, my personal favourite, copper-silver exploration targets there. So, yeah, we've been hugely active in building the company. Now, last year, 2020, saw us shift from a major focus on corporate acquisition work with some ongoing exploration to a more exploration-focused approach in the business. And that meant that we were launching major drill programs in Botswana with Molopo, Tanzania with Hennete, and we did some work drilling at Silver Peak in Canada, and lots of other exploration around the portfolio. And we looked at North America and we thought, you know, it would be good to increase our precious metals exposure in North America. And that's what we did with the Ontario acquisitions that were announced yesterday. And we looked at Australia and we saw there was another opportunity in the Paterson province that would sit nicely alongside our Victoria Goldfields interests. And so we announced that as well. So we're now at a point where we've got vibrant thrusting, if I can use that phrase, exploration across the portfolio, including some district scale drill programs. And we've bolted on a bit of extra project diversity with additional acquisitions. And we're kind of firing up on all cylinders at the moment, which is a nice place to be.
It's a lot going on, isn't it, Paul?
It's hard to squeeze it all in, isn't it?
Very hard, yeah, to squeeze it all into a few minutes there. I mean, how can you handle such a large portfolio, and especially across multiple jurisdictions and obviously time zones?
Yeah, people will look at this. I've seen some comments actually on various social media sites, because I do read them, you know, and Twitter included, about, there's so much. People are worried that we might be taking on too much and we're spreading ourselves too thin. Well, I have to defend myself really and say, first of all, we're not a normal company. Mm-hmm. We do work harder than anyone else I know, but we work smartly as well. All of our projects pretty much have local operational teams, management teams, technical teams, and so on, who can do the majority of the work. We've been aided to a certain extent by the difficulty in flying around the world, because I haven't really, in the last year, been anywhere. So we've been office-based. So having a model where you're using local resources that you engage with, you direct, you coordinate with, really does reduce the amount of time, energy, and effort that you need to get operational programs running and to stay in control of all these different interests. So we're a small, focused, central management base out of London. We then use, it's a bit like a hub and spoke type model. We use local operational teams. You'll notice in most of our announcements on new acquisitions, we say that the local team will be working with us to take a project forward. And that's the case almost universally around the business. So it's a perfectly manageable thing for us to have, this number of projects in different jurisdictions. One of the things we assess when we do acquisitions is, do we feel high level of comfort with the operational team that are in place at the other end, as it were, in Australia or in North America? And how do we think they will respond to our model? Will they provide us with regular feedback and updates? Will they follow our instructions if that's appropriate? Will they deliver us, what we need to see in terms of project development? And we're very happy that we've got the right model. Now, I only have so much time, and running this very diverse business means we do have to gear up in terms of internal management and staffing. Now, we obviously have to gear up operationally, because as our programs launch into full exploration, they will need more management oversight. And that's what we're doing right now. We're building our operational management team internally. And shareholders and investors don't necessarily see that, because I get criticism enough about too many RNSs. So if I start coming out and saying we've appointed Bert as the operations manager, if I've appointed, Sally to do North American, this, that, and the other, then they wouldn't appreciate it. But rest assured, we are building the management team. I had a bit of a mental blocker with really starting to build the management team too early, because I didn't want to have too high an overhead cost base until our working capital was sufficiently high. And as we've announced to people that, we have a significant amount of working capital, cash and liquid listed investments, so that we can be a little bit bolder and invest some money in central operations, which is exactly what we're doing. We're also looking at our finance, management of our finance, because as we run these programs overseas, one of the issues that people don't tend to see straight away is that there'll be lots of costs flying around. We need to budget and forecast reliably across a diverse portfolio. We need to manage the payment process, including validation of incoming invoices to make sure that they're reliable and they're accurate and fair. We need to make payments. We need to track those payments and so on. So finance is important. Business compliance is important. Across the world in our programs, we need to make sure we have the resources to manage environmental matters, community matters, health and safety matters, making sure we're correct from a corporate company's perspective in each of our operational activities. So we're building up our resources in those areas as well. So I can see that our team will grow materially in the coming 3 to 6 months. But it won't grow to an extent where we have a burdensome overhead cost base. We will only grow in line with our financial capability.
Okay. Well, it's great to hear about Bert and Sally, and I hope they do very well in their new position. And speaking of developing your management team, and you've also mentioned in the past about vendouts. So can you explain where you are with potential vendouts and any examples that you can give us?
Yeah, well, the traditional model in our business is an exploration company, one or two properties, quite high-level central management costs, particularly the board, high expenses, they like to fly everywhere, nice seats and nice hotels and this, that and the other. Our business is quite different. It's a controlled central cost base. We are not incentivized by salary, but by performance of the business. And that's important because it means our cash burn is quite modest. And our project management is quite controlled. So we can see, you know, visibility as to where we go with our spend. Now, why do I say that when you mention vendouts? Well, the primary principle of the vendout model is to provide additional working capital in the near, medium and long term for the business. And we've built this portfolio of many, many projects in different parts of the world. Some of it we'll take forward exploration wise ourselves, and we'll continue to run that project for potentially a long period of time. Some of it will lend itself to being vended out of the company into its own probably listed vehicle. And we've talked about the Australian JV and the IPO on a North American stock exchange. And we've talked about the Covango joint venture going into its own stock market listing. And of course, those areas, those two are moving forward at some pace. Australian JV, the Covango JV is making progress right now. And of course, you know, there's a few things that are important that we have to put in place before we can formally launch this and announce this. So for Australia, we're looking for license grants. We have three priority applications that are likely to be the first awarded, as it were. And when those grants come in, not only does it enable us to launch ground exploration, which is important, particularly in the build up to any kind of IPO or vendouts, but it also gives us real substance to take the IPO forward with active operational projects. If you look at the Covango JV, we're working hard with them on the background to get the exploration running, and that's happening now at both those projects in Botswana, whilst at the same time in parallel doing the build-up steps that you have to do to launch an IPO of the package on a recognized stock exchange. So there's lots of work streams going on. Now, outside of those two where we've publicly talked about the IPO route, there are other areas of our business that could lend themselves to vendouts. And that's important because we see a future in our company where we're obviously spending, it will be material amounts of money on our own exploration properties. But at the same time, if we can bolt on regular chunks of value onto our balance sheet from vendouts, and you know, if you're able to do a few million here, a value created, a few million there, then a few million a bit later, then you don't rely entirely on the market for funding through equity placings, and that's quite a key thing. We've had a bubbly market recently in the last, 9 months since the COVID dip in March. And it's been quite easy for companies to raise money. And that may continue for some time. But you can't, when you're as old as me, you know, you can remember the painful times when companies couldn't raise a bean unless they were prepared to knock 40% off their market price to get the money. So I think it's important for us to push the vendout model to create these big lumps of value as we move along, to increase our working capital as we go and as we grow as a business. I don't want us to be sat at, you know, circa 2.5, 3, whatever, million pounds of working capital. As we grow in size and stature, that has to go up. We have got, you know, warrant conversions. We have that provide our warrant exercises that provide us with, you know, cash at the moment, this moment in time. But I would like us to create as much value as we can from the vend outs to build the balance sheet at the same time to provide us with financial self-sufficiency. So it's happening, mm-hmm. And it's happening in many areas of the business, as you would expect.
Okay, and how does the financial model support this business plan?
Okay, so that's the essence of how we built this business from the off. We had a very clear financial model. Back in February 19, when we did the first financing, £1 million, December 19, July 20, we raised money and we raised it with warrants. Now, in those, in 19, and a little bit less so in mid 20, it was difficult to raise money. And in order to get money to do things, you had to make, you know, the financings attractive. So we did the warrant model with it, which meant that we got material blocks of capital and we were able to use that capital to develop the business. If we hadn't have raised that £2.7 million over the three fundraisings, we would not have been in a position to go and acquire some of these interests. We were taking a company, African Battery Metals, before we changed the name to Power Metal Resources, from a position where they had no money, mm-hmm. into a position of strength where they had money through equity financings and were able to do something with it. Mm-hmm. Now, so we bought into Molopo Farms, we bought into Hennetti, we bought into the Australian JV effectively, and we did so many things with that capital. We knew it was a warrant-focused model, and that meant that we got the money from the original placings. We then did our job and built this business, and that we felt would cause a material rise in our share price, which would then mean warrant money would come into the company and help us financially to continue to accelerate activities. So we built the initial momentum with placings. The warrant exercises provide us with the confidence to keep going at great pace. The more that comes in, the more we accelerate, quite frankly, mm-hmm. Because we're not a Power Metal Bank. You know, we're Power Metal Resources. We're meant to push on. The next stage is to really go up a few notches to build a mid-tier company. And for that, you need big financial resource. You need the right people inside the business, operationally, financially, promotionally, and so on. And we're going to build that team. And to fund that large operation and that large business, which will grow over the coming months and years, we're going to create value through the vend outs that add material amounts to our balance sheet and make us a completely different company from a working capital perspective. Now, alongside that as well, there may well be times when we attract institutional interest. And mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, is a natural phenomenon. And most companies such as Power Metal could expect to receive offers of finance from some strange and unusual providers and also some very traditional and solid providers. And this is blocks of capital of, you know, 1 million, 2 million, 5 million that will come into our sector, into the performing juniors. So that might come in. But as I've always said, whether it, you know, in our financings in our company, we have not hurt existing shareholders. If you buy a share in Power Metal Resources, you will not wake up the next day. If you bought it at, you know, 5p, to find that we've done a financing at 3p, it's just not going to happen. And it's the same with institutional money. I would not, you know, as a business, want to take in capital at heavy discounts to the market price. And that's partly because I've spent God knows how many hours working on this company and building it to where it is today. I'm the largest shareholder, and it's in my interest to protect the value of the company and its share price. So it's delivering us the level of working capital at each stage of our business that we need to stay absolutely aggressive and continue to build.
Okay. Well, the message that I'm getting there, Paul, from you is build, build, build. You want to build a mid-tier company, which is great to hear. But I wonder if we can focus just for a moment on you personally. What would you say your personal aims are with Power Metal Resources?
That's a good question. It has a number of different elements. I've got a large shareholding. I'm the largest shareholder. I want to build the value of that. It's nice to have money. It's nice to be able to say that you've done a job and that job's worked out and you've delivered a large amount of capital wealth for your family. I've got six kids, for God's sake, so I'm going to need a fair amount in the future. It's good to see other shareholders benefit. I like it when people say they've paid mortgages off, they've paid their cars off, they've paid for a holiday, for a wedding and that kind of thing. It's important. It gives you a real validation of what you're doing and why. But also, I think if you look at my history, I've only been doing public companies for nearly 9 years. It was 2012 I started with ECR and we had to do a full rescue job on that one. I've refinanced, restructured probably 20, 30 companies. I've generally taken the stance in the past of, look, get in there and sort it out. Make it clean financially. Make it operationally sound. Give the management team either existing or new income and opportunity. And I think in some cases it's worked out incredibly well. Look at Greatland Gold. I refinanced that one back in 2016 at 0.1 pence, and it's like in the 20 pences and was in the pences. Incredible. And there are other examples of companies that have done incredibly well. There's some of those companies that have not done as well. And perhaps the focus has been more on management compensation than delivery to shareholders. And I've looked at what I've done over the past and thought, you know, it would be nice once to take a vehicle and take it through the process and say, look, I'm going to implement what I want to implement, subject to board approval and subject to shareholder approval. I'm going to build the business in my way. I'm not going to leave it to somebody else. I'm going to do it and I'm going to focus on it. And I am a bit of a power metal focused maniac at the moment. I almost do nothing else with my time. And, you know, everything that we can bring into this business in every way we can bring it in, I'm focused on power metal and its shareholders and building that value. So most of all, don't get me wrong, I like the money side of things, you know, from the increasing value of our shareholdings. But most of all, I want to do it right. And if there are lessons and mistakes from the past that I can learn from, which there are, quite frankly, I know that, including not jumping around, because I did quite a bit of that with good intent, but I want to focus on this one business. I want to do it for as long as is necessary, and there's a fair amount of time left to go if shareholders will allow me to focus and to continue to build it into a very large organization that's got multiple interests around the globe, that's a good supporter of local communities, focused on environmental issues, focused on community issues, building a quality resource company with very, very large district scale interests, totally solid underlying financial position, and a solid share price to match it, then that would be fantastic. And maybe it's my kind of swan song, actually, in terms of corporate work, because if you do this PLC job right, Mark, it's tiring. It really is. You know, it's easy to take the mickey with one or two projects, tinker with things, ramp up the marketing when you want to raise some cash. You do this properly with all the responsibilities and administration and challenges of running a PLC, you've got to really commit. So that's my mission. That's my ambition. Really commit. Make a lot of money for myself and my family out of this. I mean, a really lot of money, not just like a few million quid. I mean, a lot of money. And then take my shareholders along. And I'll be successful if investors out there say, I'm going to buy some Power Metal. I'm not going to flip it on 10%, 50%, 100%. I'm going to buy it and just let it ride for a while and see what happens. I don't want anyone to overcommit. But if they have the faith to put some money in and just leave it there and see where it goes, then that for me will be fantastic. And I will do my best to make them a serious return whilst at the same time giving them a fantastic story.
Okay, well, great. That's a good note to finish on, Paul. So thank you very much for that. That's, of course, Paul Johnson, the CEO of Power Metal Resources. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Mark. And now you can go for that walk.
Yes, and you try and get one too, Paul. Thank you for listening to this Stockbox interview. For more information, interviews, and videos, visit our website at stockboxmedia.com or give us a follow on Twitter by searching at stockboxmedia.